You're in the sweet spot, darling, it's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling, it's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, what is going on?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I am so happy to be here for another episode of the Sweep Spot.
This is episode 375.
375? That's a lot of episodes, Lynn. That's amazing. I can't believe it.
I can't either. Wow. Yes. In March, this will be our, it'll be a 13th year.
Wow. Lucky 13.
Wow.
They've tried to shut us down. They've tried to get rid of us. You know, we're still here. We're still standing.
We are. And if you're wondering who are these guys, we are for both former Disneyland Custodial cast members. And we host the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland Custodial cast member.
Number one.
People always like when you do that. I don't know if everyone does, but I've had quite a few comments about it. So yes, Ken and I both worked at Disneyland, and we were in Custodial from a combined years of 1990 to 2007.
We're old. 1990. Yeah. I mean, that was long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of great stories, and we talk about those within the podcast and specifically our books called Cleaning the Kingdom. There's two different books, Cleaning the Kingdom. You can get volumes 1 and 2. I have just a couple of the first book signed copies. So if that's something you've been putting off, do it now, because I don't know when I'm going to order more and be able to have Ken sign them. So that's kind of a rarity too. So you can get those at thesweepspot.com, or you can get our books at Amazon, digital copies on Kindle, and the audiobook, both books on audio at Audible and wherever audiobooks are found. Okay. Also, if you'd like to support our podcast, and many have so far, we really appreciate it, you can join our Patreon. So you get all those great perks for $5 or more per month. Then you get one bonus episode delivered to you. And Ken and I record that specifically just for the bonus episode. And then you also get to join us on our current events live, as we do that once a month also, where you can chime in the chat room, and we'll try to include some of your comments within our recording. And we have a lot of fun doing that. So go over to patreon.com or thesweepspot.com and click on the Patreon link. If you don't want to use Patreon, I have a couple people that do this. You can do it like through Venmo or PayPal or whatever. But you have to email me at thesweepspot@gmail.com, and then I'll just put you on a list and send you these things through an email, if that's like another a way of you'd like to do that. But the preferred way is Patreon, but if you do want to do it other ways, just let me know. Ooh, a lot of information here. Also, something very important. Ken and I are both going to be at the Disneyland Resort January 19th. That is just a week. If you're listening to this on the day it comes out, just a week away.
Yeah, that's January 19th, mm-hmm. Friday, January 19th, 2024.
Yep, we're going to try to be there at Rope Drop. We'll see. that's the goal, is to be there at Rope Drop. Probably the west side. So if you're going to be there in the Rope Drop and you want to try to find us, we'll be over that way. And Probably the best way, because we're not really going to have like a meetup or a specific spot to meet everyone. We don't want to cause a riot or anything. No, just
yeah, it'd be too disruptive.
No, but we do want you to reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or X. They're calling it, the kids are calling it nowadays, or Facebook on our page. And we'll try to check those throughout the day. And if you want to, and you're there, we can try to meet up with you somewhere. Or if you just happen to see us, I'm going to have some buttons. So we'll hand out some buttons if we see you. And it'd be a lot of fun. We always love chatting with everyone. So January 19th, if you're going to be in the parks, I will actually be in the parks afternoon to evening of the 18th. So if you're going to be around then, I will also be in the parks if you can't make it on the 19th.
I've sent you ahead as an advance team to prepare the park for my presence.
I did. I am doing that for sure. So that is something coming up pretty soon. It's kind of a rare thing that there's both of us in the parks. So, all right, Ken, who is our guest tonight?
I have no idea. Actually, we have someone by the name of Ken Bruce. Mm-hmm. And we're having him on because he's got such a great first name. Ken is he's worked a lot in the animation industry. Mm-hmm. And he's written a book.
Yeah.
The book is on the drinking fountains of Disneyland. No. No, what is the actual title of the book? Is it Before the Birds Sang Words?
Yeah, so it's Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, Before the Birds Sang Words.
Yeah, right. This is legit. This is a legit mm-hmm. book.
Oh yeah.
If you want to know more about the Tiki Room, maybe it's one of your favorites. Maybe you really don't know much about it at all. Either way, that's going to be something for you. So we're going to talk with him about that and get more information and reminisce about Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room.
Yeah. So can't wait to share that with you. But before we get into that, we're going to have a message coming up here. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
Welcome to Adventureland. One of Disneyland's most popular lands, Adventureland is the home of two very popular attractions, the Enchanted Tiki Room and the Jungle River Cruise. Located near the entrance to Adventureland, Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room is a South Seas island adventure that features the singing of some 225 tropical birds, flowers, and tiki gods. And it's an adventure that takes no time at all to get started. Even before entering the Tiki Room itself, guests are given a taste of the tropical magic in store for them as tiki gods and goddesses in the Enchanted Garden introduce themselves and tell exciting legends of the South Seas. After meeting talking tiki gods, guests are ushered into the Tiki Room for one of the most unusual and colorful musical fantasies in Disneyland.
So, Ken, Tell us your Disney story. Like, did you grow up watching Disney movies or going to Disneyland or any of the parks?
Oh gosh. I think the first bit is, I love Disney animation. And even at a young age, I would say age 5, if you had asked me what I wanted to do, okay, maybe age 6, I would have said, I want to be an animator. And if you had kept going on that, I would have said, well, I want to be a Disney animator because their animation is the best. I'd seen Flintstones, I'd seen all the limited animation stuff. But as a young kid, I knew quality, and Disney was quality. And something about that, the color, the movement, the animation was mesmerizing to me and magic. And I just had to be a part of that. And I remember some silly, like, what was it, Wonderama when I was a kid? That was a kid's TV show, and they had a whole bunch of kids on there, and the hosts of the show said, so how many of you want to be an animator? Because I guess they had an animator on. And three quarters of the kids' hands raised, and I thought, you kids aren't serious, but I am, and I'm going to get into animation, and you guys aren't. You guys are just a bunch of, animation fans, but I'm the real thing. So I was always into animation. And then, of course, I think it was at age 5, I went to Disneyland. I was one of those Disneyland kids. We didn't go a lot as a family, but the few times we went were, rearranged my neocortex. I was five years old when I went on Small World, say. And that was pageantry and color and motion that I was not familiar with at all. And it was an explosion of holy cow magic. And then everything else, actually, when I, at age 5, everything else at Disneyland was terrifying. But Small World, wow. And of course, then at age 7, I think that was when I saw the Enchanted Tiki Room for the first time. And that would have been our next family's visit. And again, life changing. I mean, literally life changing. It was pure magic. And one magic trick after another, one surprise after another. I didn't understand the whole tiki side of it. I just knew that the room looked a little edgy. But those birds and the flowers and the tikis were absolutely enchanted. And so that blew my mind. So in tandem, as I grew up, I did end up going to CalArts. I didn't end up becoming an animator. I worked for, like a lot of us in animation, we work for every studio on the planet. So I yeah so but I always had that love of Disney and Disneyland. So I guess that sort of answers your question.
No, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. So you said you were an animator and you worked for several different studios. How did you get to work for Disney?
So Disney, it was brief. I was briefly at the Disney Studios on a project that did not get made called Wildlife. I did work at Disney TV on Phineas and Ferb, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else in there. And I worked at Pixar for 2 years on Up and Toy Story 3. And then, the balance of it was a director on Fairly Odd Parents for Nickelodeon. I worked on Over the Garden Wall for Cartoon Network and Adventure Time. Both of those actually awarded me, along with a good chunk of the crew, an Emmy, which was really great.
Ooh,
Worked on
congratulations.
Shrek. Thank you. Shrek over at
Oh,
DreamWorks,
yeah.
which was probably the most fun I've ever had in animation. I was with a small story crew, and we just spent 2 years laughing together. I think that energy
Yeah.
got into the movie. And so that was just great fun. Worked in the first season of The Simpsons. Trying to think, there's a lot of different projects. Invader Zim, that's a big fan favorite. Worked on Fern Gully, also known as Avatar.
Fern
Gully, you know, was very close to Avatar story-wise, but we were the first. So lots of little projects. Right now I'm currently working on Family Guy, doing like timing direction, which is kind of like directing the animation.
Well, I feel like we could go down a whole bunch of different roads with this, but
I wanted to point out, because when you say animation these days to the general public, they're generally thinking, you know, what you just talked about, the CGI or the hand-drawn stuff that you've seen in like Disney classic animation or in TV or, you know,
yes,
The Simpsons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, stop motion, like Nightmare Before Christmas, that's also animation. And so, so is the Enchanted Tiki Room.
Absolutely. And they had, Walt pulled real honest to God animators in to help work with that. I know Wathel Rogers was the main programmer, and he did come from animation, and ex Atencio was called in for a little while to help, because even though the main showbirds, the MCs, had only five functions, those functions, if put together in the right way from an animator perspective, would give you the illusion of much more fluid and interesting animation. And you get that from an animator. An animator goes, okay, what can these birds do? And then knows how to blend those motions in a beautiful way to give you actually, again, a sense of much more fluid animation than is actually there, in a sense. So animation played animators played a role in that show.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the whole park was basically built off of, you know, animators and people from the studio that built sets and things, movie makers.
Sure. But Disneyland was built on the backs of people who knew how to tell stories visually, and guide the eye through an experience, and things like the Pirates of the Caribbean or the Haunted Mansion or even the Tiki Room, they are not stories like you open a book and say once upon a time, but as they were put together by storytellers, they definitely have a flow, a three-act structure that is built by people who really knew how to do that. And the Tiki Room is no different. The Tiki Room is if you really think about it, old school vaudeville. It has all the parts of vaudeville. It has the classic, it's no longer there, but then the classic, there's the classic, like vaudeville, there would always be the classical section, which again is no longer there. That would have been the Offenbach number that has long since been cut, but I would argue to put it back. It has the groan-inducing puns and jokes that an MC would tell. It has the magic tricks. It has the pretty girls, that are just there to look pretty and sing pretty. And that's classic vaudeville. And I actually was talking to, and I love the line, I was actually talking to Wally Bogue's son, recently. Wally Bogue voiced the main MC Jose, as well as was a huge part of the writing of the show. And Wally was an old school vaudevillian, and told his son, I believe, that Walt himself was, a vaudevillian wannabe, like a frustrated vaudevillian himself. So, you know, Walt loved Wally Bogue for that reason. He was able to get close to that sort of style of entertainment that, you know, he would have remembered from his childhood.
And of course, if anybody listening, we always assume that our listeners already know all this stuff, but I've gotten into the habit now where I want to kind of bring in newer listeners who might not be as familiar with this.
Absolutely.
Sort of thing. Of course, Wally Bogue for many, many years performed in the Golden Horseshoe.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
The Golden Horseshoe Review, really long running show. And of course, Steve Martin considers him one of his inspirations and that sort of
thing. Exactly. Yeah. Pretty much there's no such thing as an e-ticket in Disneyland's earliest days. But if you were to struggle to find them, they would actually have been, of all things, Main Street USA. That boulevard was an attraction itself, and the Jungle Cruise that was the big draw, and definitely the Golden Horseshoe Review. The Golden Horseshoe Review was the must see show at Disneyland, and you would not be disappointed going there and seeing it. I don't recall how many times they did it throughout the day. I'm going to say, but people lined up down the street for that thing. And it was an absolute delight. And of course, it was also the show that hit the Guinness Book of World Records for longest running show. Those people kept doing it day after day, year after year, for an incredibly long period of time. And their last show seemed as fresh as their first. And that was a huge, huge part of Disneyland history.
What a huge show. I was just thinking as you were saying that, I thought it really is, because they had, you know, they just didn't have background music or a piano player. They had a full, like, small band orchestra there.
Yeah, that was a full-on live show.
Right.
With, I forget the number of cast members. I think it was a 300-seat room. And it's, quite frankly, it's a little sad to visit the space today, because it's really not being used for that. It's certainly not putting on the same show. I mean, there occasionally there's entertainment there, but nothing like the old days. And it was a spot that was incredibly important to Walt himself. Walt was there all the time. He was there several days before the park opened to celebrate his anniversary. He loved the venue. He loved the performers. He was frustrated too, because he did want more people to see the show than less, which is part of the reason he kept thinking about automated shows where he could control the performance and more people could see them. And of course, the performers, quote unquote, in them would not take time off or need a weekend for their voice to come back.
Right. They get busted out on the town doing something they shouldn't, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And a consistent show too.
Consistency. It's funny because that, I know that was one of the driving things, you know, consistency. Of course, you know, in the last couple of decades, theme parks have tried to get inconsistent in some ways and tried to give you a different experience on the same attraction. I mean, I guess they could eventually, if they ever do tinker with the Tiki Room again, there's people yelling at me, no, quiet, shut up. But
if they ever tinker with a Tiki Room,
they could call me
because I'm not against them tinkering with it. I think that they need to preserve the original show. Don't get me wrong.
But
they can actually reshape it for a new generation. And one of the things I think I would argue is, like, the Carousel of Progress is a huge attraction in Disney history. It is at Disney World now, and I think the powers that be knew that it was a little corny around the edges, but they reshaped it as an homage, and rightfully so, to Walt. So before you actually go into the auditorium, they have a video that says, here's the show in context. And then when you go in, there's a little bit of a narration talking about how it's the show's connection to Walt. And when an audience member has that, they are now equipped with the tools to enjoy the attraction on a whole new level. And I think actually the Tiki Room would survive something like that really well. And I have great ideas for it, but preserve the show. There are lots and lots of tools to make it a little bit more, more technologically advanced, and tools to make it more engaging to modern audiences who want to, or whose idea of, you know, fun is going to Star Wars land and shooting rebel spies. But you can do that, and you can also put that show in the context of Walt, and again give audiences a new appreciation for something that they should have, because quite frankly the Tiki Room is a sacred, as far as I'm concerned, to the history of Disneyland and theme parks in general.
I always thought that it would be a good idea to do a Christmas overlay for that.
That has been thought of before. I befriended, when I was at Pixar, a gentleman by the name of Josh Shipley. I don't believe he's there anymore, but he was arguing for a Christmas overlay for years, and his ideas were really fun.
They have to have the technology that they could alternate, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
That changing costumes is a different matter, but they're birds. I don't know if they really need costumes.
you can reprogram the show, and you know, and playing the new show is as simple as, you know, pushing the right button instead of the left button.
But I agree with you that they need to keep the original around. If they ever do anything like that, if, you know, they need to at least keep the original around, and they would have the technology to do that. I don't know, you could do a Halloween overlay, make it Hitchcockian, you know, it's the birds, really scare
it's
the kids.
It's funny because if you think about it, the new attraction, Mickey's Runaway Railway, I think that's what it's called, it's, you know, 99.9% projection stuff. So they could swap that out with, you know, a holiday overlay without too much problem, and make it a fresh new show. I think the original show needs to be respected. I think it needs to stay there, but you can dress it up in a new way. I do think the Baccarol, the Offenbach number, which was cut because people found it too dull. And in fact, back in 1963, some of the people working on it found it too dull and in the wrong place. But it's also a beautiful piece. You can put that back in, and you can dress it up with new effects that will mesmerize.
Yeah.
I trust Imagineers to be able to do that. And it's a beautiful piece. You could I have no problem with them taking the original orchestrations and re-recording them. I would immediately like scream for Michael Giacchino and say, Michael, can we re-record all of George Burns's original, but fluff them up a bit? Michael probably would be jump for joy at that assignment. And then you'd have an audio experience that, though it's very, very good now, could be even better, more rich and full, and also respect George Burns's original orchestrations. So anyway, I got a whole like, if they ever start to do that, call me. I got great ideas. And I will, and all the diehard fans of the show would be in good hands.
There was a time that they decided, when they were just the operations, that they were going to limit the hours that it was running. And so it would close early. And when I was working, I worked out in Adventure Frontier a lot at night. And to me, it was like the perfect break room. I was sad it wasn't open for the guests.
Yesterday, I was at Disneyland. I'm not I love Disneyland. I just hate the crowds, and that was one of the worst. But anyway, Disneyland would be great if it just didn't have people in it. The only people in it would be me and maybe a couple friends. People just ruin it. But that being said, I was there yesterday, and they did have it open late into the evening, probably because it was a busy night. And when I visited, it was six other people maybe in the auditorium, which was thrilling to me. Because I got the show, it felt like, in a sense, I got the show to myself, which was great. What's my point? My point is, like, if you were to ask me, Ken, why did you write your book? There's several reasons. But one of the reasons is, one of the reasons definitely relates to the fact that I would be in that room and I would watch people leave. And it would frustrate the heck out of me because I would want to grab them, sit them down in a quiet space and say, okay, these are all the reasons why you should not leave this room. Like, right. This is a sacred space. Don't, like, this is why it's important. And I would, I don't know, based on my own lame hubris, think that that would work. that they would come back and go, wow. They would be like, wow, I did not know that either. And then they would go walk back in and then watch it two more times and sit through the whole thing. So that would really frustrate me. I would like, do you guys know where you are?
Yeah.
let me tell you. And then thus a 397 page book is born. I was like, who's going to tell that? I might as well tell that story.
My next question was, what led you to the writing of this book?
That's one of them. But yeah. the real, well, other than my absolute love for the attraction and my knowledge of where it fits in Disney history, you guys probably know Kevin Gidney. He is a bit of a legend among Disney Parks fans and is responsible with his partner for creating an amazing line of merchandising opportunities for us fans to really celebrate the park. Walt's Park, which I love. When I was working at Pixar, I stumbled upon, well, when I was working at Pixar, Pete Docter, who was directing the film that I was currently then on, Up, the balloon movie, he always did his luau at his house around the pool, basically a tiki themed event every year, and I was able to go. And Pete pulled me aside and says, "Ken," because he knew I was a huge Disneyland nerd. Pulled me aside and said, "I have somebody you need to meet," and so I met Kevin and Jody. And yeah, sure enough, Pete could not be more correct. We got to chatting, and one of the things Kevin mentioned was that, you know, over the years he had been collecting, as a big fan of the Tiki Room, just a bunch of great ephemera that he loved. Stuff that he felt maybe only he and maybe nobody else on the planet other than him would be interested in. But as he quickly found out that I was a Disneyland, a Tiki Room fan, he was like, I have this collection of stuff. If you want to take a look at it, you're more than welcome to. And he said, it's really nice that I found someone who is as interested in this stuff as I am, because I don't know what use this stuff is. And then he said, just as an aside, and I remember like yesterday, he said, unless someone were writing a book, and I was like, this is the book that I've always wanted to read. Since I was a kid, I'd always wanted to pick up the book on how the Tiki Room came to be. It was like the number one book I ever wanted to read. And I thought, no one has ever written it. Oh my God, the Tiki Room's going to have an anniversary soon, not soon, but in a few years. And that haunted me. And I kept thinking, no one is going to write this book. And there is this great collection that Kevin just gave me, which was full of just great little tidbits. I have to write this book. I guess I have to write this book. So I took work off. I have to just go for it. And so it was basically like 10 plus years of just me plotting out the book in my head, and then another 6 years of writing. And of course, it wasn't just Kevin's stuff. Kevin was the tip of the iceberg of many other things that I'd collected myself, that I'd found in various books, newspapers, articles, interviews, and through it all, I found there's a really compelling story here. And the longer I immersed myself in it, and the more I delved into the book, I was like, this is really compelling. This is a great story. I'm really, really proud that I'm getting this out there, because I really want I really want people to understand what went into it. I really want to celebrate the amazing people that were tasked with creating this attraction. All of them were doing something they had never done before. All of them had been asked by Walt to do X, Y, or Z, and all of them thought to themselves, I don't know how to do this. They didn't tell Walt that, but Walt trusted that they could. But they were like, Walt just asked me to do something that I don't know where, why, like, why? Like, Wathel Rogers, he was just an animator who had mechanical, he built little mechanical toys for fun since he was a kid. And Walt saw that and said, oh, you're the guy to make an entire room full of birds come to life and put on a show. And Wathel was like, thanks, Walt. I guess I got to do this. And Wathel's is one of many, many stories where everybody was like doing something that was completely bananas, that they had no idea how to do.
You hear that all the time. I read a lot of Disney books. You hear that. We talked to Bob Gurr, and he said the same thing. You know, you're going to build a roller coaster in a mountain. You know,
Bob Gurr was an automotive designer. You know, and not a mechanic. But it's like, all right, well, you're going to do the mechanical stuff too.
Well, and again, we have to remember these people weren't going home, you know, on Friday going, yeah, I think I can do this. No, they were going home on a Friday going, I can't do this. But Walt wants me to do this, and I guess he believes that I can do this, and I guess that's enough. Yeah. And they all moved forward, and that is an amazing story unto itself. And again, I kept running to the same story time and time again. So I wanted to celebrate those people, you know, that were solving problems that had never been solved before. My respect for engineers has gone through the roof. My dad was an engineer, and I was like, you know, nice to see you, Dad. But now I think back going, God, I wish I could sit down with them and go and tell them how much I respect that, because engineers, Disney has called them Imagineers, but back in 1963, they were still trying to figure out what to call these people. But they were engineers. They were problem solvers. They were constantly doing detective work to figure out how to do things that had never been done before. And I'm so glad I was able to celebrate them. And in a way, you know, most of them have passed on, and yet I feel like they were very, very much alive when I was writing this book. It is the weirdest feeling to be writing a book where you're in that space. I was living in 1962 and earlier for a very long period of time. And it was very immediate and very creepy how it felt like they were very much over my shoulder. And I wanted to do their stories proud. And I wanted us to, you know, remember them.
Yeah, and I'm sure you had a chance to interview some of the people that obviously are still around that, you know, we just lost Rolly Crump not too long ago.
Yeah. And actually, believe it or not, I never met Rolly, but I delved into every interview he ever made. There were lots. So I did feel like I got his story. I have had wonderful times to chat with Bob Gurr, informally at various times. He's just a delight. And delightfully humble in his way. He did some amazing things. He made it look easy, and it's not. It's incredibly difficult what they had to solve, the problems they had to solve. And I guess they moved forward on the level of excitement. Like, yeah, I've never done this before, but again, Walt believes me, and I'm going to have fun. I'm going to figure this out. I'm yammering on. See, I told you I was going to do this.
Oh, but you're good.
when it comes to the context of the Tiki Room, and again, I could talk for hours, so just kick me. In the context of the Tiki Room, it is very, very important to put that show in context. There was no Pirates of the Caribbean. There was no Haunted Mansion. There was no, you know, Rise of the Resistance. There's no other show. There's no Small World. There's no, like, the best attraction at the park was the Jungle Cruise. People lined up for that. But there was nothing like this anywhere. The idea of going into a room and having a room full of inanimate kind of diorama-like birds that for people in 1963 would be one type of bird, a museum bird, a stuffed bird. To see these things come to life and put on a joyous, wacky, surreal, weird, dappy show, and then topped with, seven other crazy surprises. The show is quaint today, but back in 63, it was mind-blowing. And have to put that in capital letters, and I have to underline it.
I totally agree. The context, because that was going to be my next question, was the context of it all.
Yeah.
I mean, you would look at the park had been open, park opened in mid-1955. So you have, you're like 7 years in when this is getting underway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, 7 years ago, think about what 7 years ago now, not that long ago.
It's not that long. And this was using space age technology to pull off an automated show that, a puppet show with no strings, and people jaw dropping is literal. There was a great, Chris Nichols did a Taschen book on Disneyland. There's one 2-page spread in that book that shows what looks like an early photo of the show. And it might have actually been, I don't know, I should ask Chris whether it was from the mock-up, but it's, it looks like it was shot at Disneyland in the 60s. It's a down shot and you can get to see the crowd there. And it's just like the looks on the people's faces are very clear. There's a few kids in there, and their jaws have dropped. Literally, these kids and many of the adults have a look on their face like, "What is going on?" It's the magic trick to end all magic tricks. We're used to it now, but again, once you put yourself in that context, it's the show takes on a whole new level of meaning. And I start the book with, is a very reasonably well known among us tiki nerds, an essay written by a man who was in the medical field. I have no idea why he wrote it for his medical journal, but he's comparing the tiki room to, his experiences in the greatest cathedrals of Europe. And I get it. I understand why. He was like this, and he was cautiously mentioning that. He's like, I don't feel quite comfortable doing that, but it's true. Like, he felt a sense of awe and wonderment that was akin to him visiting the greatest cathedrals in the world.
That's true. It seems like it's hard to awe people nowadays, but you have to, like Kenneth said, you have to put it into context.
Thing. And they've tried ever since. And that, that sense of creating magic, Mark Davis, one of the show's designers and animators, a animator who worked on designing the show, was talking about the element of surprise that is all over the Tiki Room is what he and Imagineers strive for ever since, that giving guests something that they did not expect. And the Tiki Room was all about sitting people down and going, wait till you see what we have up our sleeve. And Walt, being the amazing showman that he was totally in on it. He was like super excited about showing this thing to people. A show that quite frankly started so wasn't going to be a show. That's a huge part of the book. It was just going to be a happening. It was going to be a restaurant. You're going to sit down and this thing would happen. And it was nothing like the show that it is today. It was just a bunch of weird things happening. But anyway, it kept getting bigger and bigger and more elaborate and more elaborate. it outgrew the restaurant, though a lot of mythology is wrapped up into actually why the restaurant was nixed. It's not such an easy answer. Read my book. But be that as it may, it became its own show. And again, Walt could hardly wait to see how people reacted. And he would go back to the show many times just to look at people as they left, or jump in and stare at them in the dark, because that ultimately was what gave him the greatest pleasure. And it was an incredibly personal show to Walt. There was so much going on at the studio that Rare was the project that got his full attention. Mary Poppins was one of them, but that's a Rare example. Enchanted Tiki Room was a Rare example. He loved that thing. He called it his baby.
And then the climax, you know, the thunder is like, I remember as a kid, and I still, even as an adult, like for a few seconds, you think, wow, it's raining outside. Because I don't know, I just remember as a kid thinking, wow, it's raining. How'd they do that?
Yeah.
You know, isn't
yeah. Brad Bird, who wrote the foreword, mentioned that as well, that his mother was absolutely convinced that it had rained outside and was confused that the pavement was dry when they left. And I get that. Again, people were, back in 63, they were really willing to believe,
just go with it. You know, they were, suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. Thank you. Suspension of disbelief. Exactly. Yeah. And then going to the show yesterday, that rain effect, which is actually very, very simple, still works wonders. Still just great.
People do get into that mindset though of disbelief. I mean, the suspension of disbelief. I mean, I've been there when there's been real rainbows overhead, and I'll say, looks like a real rainbow, doesn't it? And people will be like, that's a Disney rainbow.
It's funny because, Michael Crichton wrote Westworld, and he wrote Westworld on the back of the fact that the Disneyland, was crammed to the gills with synthetic creatures all over the park. And, it still is to a certain extent, indoors and outdoors. Like, you would just see an elk and go, well, that's fake. And then you'd see a real bird and go, well, that's got to be fake too. For the longest time, people thought that the swans, no longer there, but there were several swans in the lagoon out in front of the Sleeping Beauty's castle. People were convinced those were fake. And I don't know what my point is. I've lost my point, but that being that mechanical creatures were very much a part of Disneyland, and very, very believable to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, it's also the first air. I believe they said it's the first air conditioned building.
First air conditioned building for guests, but that was not because anybody was really concerned about the guests. It's because they needed to have air conditioning for the super hot machinery down below, which could blow easily if it had not been air conditioned. This is when they had vacuum tubes and transistors that could blow easily, so it had to be super cold. And the guests up above got to enjoy that. Yeah.
That's one space I didn't get to explore working there. And I would have loved to have seen that space down there.
Yeah. If anybody out there hears this and allows me to get a little, little backstage pass to below the Tiki Room, I'm all about it. I was able to actually do that. How funny, because you guys worked in custodial, correct?
Correct.
And I had a friend in custodial because I worked at Disney World back in the early days of Epcot Center. And he was able to get me down to the basement of the Tiki Room in Florida. And had I known I was going to be writing a book one of these days, I probably would have begged to stay down there for several days. And you wouldn't even have to feed me. I'd be happy enough. But I did get to see it down there, and I should have taken notes. I mean, I got some, but you know, that was when they were still using the, tape, a big strip of tape to run the show. And I got to see the machinery that, raised the central fountain. That central fountain is no longer there in Florida. They long since removed it, but it was there for a time. So that was really cool. Yeah. But boy, I'd love to waddle down below the Tiki Room. That would be magic.
What did you do at Epcot?
Oh, I just put people on rides. I was the how many in your party guy for the Horizons Pavilion and the World of Motion.
Oh, cool.
Both long since gone. Two of
the best attractions of all time, by the way.
Oh, I miss the old Epcot, when actually there was an idea that behind it, and clever organization. Now it's just like, I don't know.
I was very fortunate that my first visit was September of 1989, because it was still Epcot Center. They'd just gotten to the point where they really completed the initial opening. I mean, they opened up the health pavilion, the Wonders of Life.
Yeah.
And so that pretty much capped off the original plan.
I get the Disney parks are not museums. I understand that, and everything has to remain relevant. I think my bigger issue is, if you're going to replace something like Horizons, well, replace it with something better, which is hard to do. But no, they replaced it with an attraction where you could go and throw up.
Well, which is why we don't want them messing with the Tiki Room, unless we're absolutely sure that they're going to do something like preserve the original show and do an alternate show, like in the afternoon or, every other hour or whatever,
Yeah. I'm not a fan of, I want that original to stay. Like, what, an alternate show, maybe, maybe the Tiki Room, the documentary, where you could actually go in there and have a pre-show that gives you some context. I'm all about that. But that show, that original show is so chock full of just important history, right down to the voices. Almost every last voice is in the show is a story worth telling. The people that worked on it, a story worth telling. Get rid of it, and you're not recognizing, quite frankly, that the Tiki Room is a masterwork of pop culture. It is one of the 10 most important pop culture works of art there is. It's quite simply this. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is.
Did you do the under new management version at Walt Disney World?
I did see it, and I wrote about it.
It's back to the original now. But
yeah.
I never saw under new management myself.
It was, pick up the book and you'll, I'm speechless. It was exactly the opposite of what Disney is. Disney should never, ever. Disney was never cool. Disney was, and that was its charm. Disney is its own thing. And for Disney to make fun of Disney, it's basically, it's a new bird in there telling everybody that this show sucks. And you need to change. You need to be relevant. You need to do numbers. You need to do hip hop and rock and pop. Like, you need to not be so corny. And we forget that Disney's strength is that it was never cynical. It was just about joy. So that, among many other reasons, it's just that was one of the greatest misfires in Disney history. I don't know how it happened, but it was, you know, right down to a final joke that was ha 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 for who? Like, who's going to Disneyland? We are not going to Disneyland to be told that Disneyland is not cool. We do not go to Disneyland to hear a joke about how the Hall of Presidents is boring and you should take a nap there. Like, how did that even happen?
Well, this is probably why they, when it burned down, they replaced it with the original. You know,
well, I would like to think they replaced it with original because they got wise.
Yeah.
But yeah, but all the more reason, just don't screw with the original Tiki Room. And again, you can make it, you can dress it up. You can make the mechanics better. You can add, you know, projection effects and maybe even dress up the fountain with new effects and create a brighter score. You can do a lot. But please understand what you have there. And they do. For the time being, they do. I mean, no plans yet to turn it into a stroller parking lot. But that was one of the big things with my book, is to remind people why that's so important. Not just for Disneyland history, but for pop culture history. Again, it's all, well, not again, I haven't said it yet. It's one of the few remaining and certainly most lavish and audacious expressions of Tiki Pop, the Tiki Pop culture that, you know, what became cool in the 90s. Again, that was so cuckoo and crazy and cool in its day, but then came out of fashion and then back in. A lot of the classic tiki sort of establishments that were part of that huge craze, Americana craze, pop culture crazes, are gone. But the Tiki Room is still there and is a great expression of that very goofy, naive, but joyful expressions of sort of Polynesian love, how Americans just for a time went crazy in love with all things exotic and island flavored and adventurous, you know, because, you know, so many people in America were living in suburbia. So the idea of going to an establishment not too far and feeling like you're on an island, you know, with no inhibitions and you know, free to take your shoes off and relax after a hard day at the office and feel like you're far, far away. You know, the Tiki Room is part of that. The Tiki Room at Disneyland is part of that culture, and it's still there.
I'm so glad you did this book, because I collect a lot of Disney books, and I love that when someone does a book on one specific attraction, because they take this deep dive, especially you, that I'm reading it. I'm like a quarter of the way through, but I loved how you set the
keep going.
Yeah, well, of course, you set the story, you know, way before Disneyland was even open, and then you kind of led through the opening of Disneyland and kind of setting up the whole story before you even get to the Tiki Room, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I think, you know, I actually think it works. I was struggling with, I realized, oh my God, I've written so much of this book and I haven't even started in with like John Hinch's first sketch of a Tahitian style tea room that eventually led to Disneyland. And I kept thinking, but this is important. I think this context is important because it does lead you eventually to the Tiki Room. Stories like, you know, Walt having a father who didn't believe in the value of toys, and how Walt's love, you know, lack of toys as a child led to many things that then led to the Tiki Room. Context is everything. And I think if you dip your, you know, if you do what's the word, invest in that context, the story becomes much more poignant and powerful and touching. I think, quite frankly, there are a couple moments in the book where I'm like, I kind of shed it, like I'm such a dope, kind of shed a tear. But I shed that tear because I had trod through all that context. And if I hadn't, it wouldn't have been so emotional. And that story, in some respects, yeah, the Tiki Room story, believe it or not, it's kind of emotional. When you invest in that context. And also, it's funny you mentioned that because, yeah, one of the big lessons I learned in writing this book is like, I treated it like I'm going to tell a story about the creation of the Tiki Room in a sense that this is the only thing that Walt was thinking about, or, you know, like this is the only thing in Walt's life. And of course, that's hardly the case. There were many, many productions Walt was in, but that was the context. It's like, I'm just going to focus on this, on Walt's story, as if everything in his life led to the Tiki Room, which actually in some cases is true, quite frankly. But in doing that, in just focusing on that slice, I think some information popped out that has, and some stories have popped out of that that have never been told. I'm convinced of that. Like there is a new side of Walt that emerges from this book that I didn't anticipate. Kind of Walt the child, Walt the nerd, Walt the kid who didn't get to play with toys, that finally did get to play with toys. Walt the guy that was insecure, that wanted people to see what he could do, like with his own hands, the diorama projects that led to Disneyland, that led to the Tiki Room, quite frankly. So again, once you like in taking a look at that slice, I think some new things, new realizations came through that delighted me. And I've read every book on Walt, but I felt like I saw a new side of him that had never really been explored.
I feel like I got that just from reading your book. So you accomplished that for sure.
That I hope so. Thank you. That's nice of you. That's sweet of you to say.
Well, so the book is called Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, Before the Birds Sang Words, by Ken Bruce. And yeah. I got mine on Amazon.
That's the only place to get it now, because right. I have no idea how to sell it elsewhere. But who knows? Yeah. That's why I probably need somebody to help me.
Is there a place people can follow you or find you on social media? publicly?
Not yet. I'm working on that too.
Okay.
This is obviously like one of these cuckoo passion projects. I was like, I just got to do this. I don't know. I can write the book. I don't know how to, beyond that, I had, you know, people help me put together the book. It's still very personal, right down to the cover art that was done by Dave Thomas. But, you know, I had an idea of what I wanted and we worked together to achieve it. But no, I'm new to all of that. It's on Amazon now. It's the only place you can get it now. But who knows? Eventually, maybe there will be other ways to get the book. And stay tuned. Since you haven't kicked me out, Before the Birds Sang Words. When I came up with that title, I realized, you know, again, halfway in the book, and I haven't even started writing about the Tiki Room, I thought, what this is really about is everything that happened before the show, Before the Birds Sang Words. I remember like being in the shower and like hitting upon that title well into the production of this book and going, oh my God, I think I found it. Right down to the cover art. So the cover art is the bird looking an opposite direction. Those birds in the Tiki Room do not look that way. That was a happy accident because my artist drew the bird looking the wrong way, but now it's become the right way. I do have a section in the book later which I call After the Bird Sang Words, which is just a brief history of the show and animatronics after the Tiki Room, and I'm like, wait a minute, I can use the bird again with the head facing the correct way to show, you know, forward movement. And also the cover shows a bird deeply in silhouette. And I remember that was an iconic, at age seven, an iconic image from my childhood, walking into the room and seeing kind of silhouettes of birds. I did, you know, the room was dark up there. And I remember seeing those birds in silhouette and going, you know, is something going to happen? Like, what is something going to happen? And then to see them then later lights dim and then fully illuminate and pop to life. That sense of anticipation, that sense of darkness. So I put that in the book. The book, the bird is in silhouette with that little suggestion that, you know, with the eye kind of bright, that thing might come to life. So all of this was carefully thought out. This was a long process, but done. But ultimately, an incredible, I'd like to say, labor of love. I hope it shows through. I love that thing, and I think it's incredibly important. I think it's a story worth telling, and I hope I told it well.
Well, I'm really enjoying it so far, and I highly recommend it. And I think it's a beautiful, a beautiful book, and all around.
Thank you so much.
And I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
My pleasure, Lynn. And also Ken.
I know it's a hard name to remember. So
the other Ken Pellman. And thank you for giving me a shout out and time to yammer for a little while about this subject. And of course, I hope people pick up the book and enjoy the story as much as I did putting it together. And I think they'll be surprised. I think we've all read a whole bunch of Disney books before, but so it's hard to not bump into what we've all heard before. But I think there's a lot of great new information.
There is.
All right, thank you, Lynn. Thank you, yeah. Ken.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Super fun chatting with you guys.
What an episode, Ken. I really enjoy having other authors on the show, especially people when they talk about an attraction that I love myself, like the Tiki Room.
Yeah, it's good to get some background as into, you know, why did they do this particular book, and you know, their interest in Disneyland and that particular attraction. And so that was great. You know, I love doing this podcast because I can't get enough of this sort of thing, and getting to bring it to others is fun. So I love it.
I do too. I always do. Wanted to mention real quick before we move on to reading some of the reviews and a couple other things is, if you didn't catch it in the introduction, Ken and I are going to be at Disneyland January 19th. And you can try to look for us, or you can go on social media, on Instagram and The Sweet Spot, or our Facebook group on Facebook. We have a page and a group. And then also you can follow Ken or myself on X, which is Twitter. So yeah, just look us up and we will try to meet up with you. And always great to talk with everyone. So I want to read a couple reviews here that were new. And the first one is one of my favorite Disney podcasts, 5 stars from Coast to Coast CM. Says, I came across the Sweet Spot podcast a few years back and has become one of my favorites. If you are a Disney fan or even former cast member, you will definitely enjoy listening. Lynn, Ken, and their guests always have fascinating stories to share that you won't hear anywhere else. Thank you to you both for producing such an excellent show.
Oh, so good to hear that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And the last one we have here called, titled Wonderful Look at Disneyland History, 5 stars by Joe MCL 516, December 15th, 2023. I have been listening to this podcast since episode 135. but have never bothered to leave a review before now. But this show is amazing, and I'm thankful for all the car and bus rides it has gotten me through over the past 9 years.
Wow.
I'm sorry. There is so much better. There is nothing better than hearing Ken's amazement when Lynn announces the episode number, and the show that follows is always chock full of great insight into Disneyland history or entertaining guests. I would recommend this show to any Disneyland fan without hesitation.
Wow, there's an endorsement. Thank you so much.
Yes, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. 9 years. Wow, you are a trooper. Wow. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for thank you for putting up with us that long.
So if you have been listening to us, not necessarily 9 years, but if you have, or even more, or even one episode, and you love this show, please leave us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and we will read this here. And we'd love to get the reviews. It helps us out, and we just love reading them, and kind of gives us a little boost sometimes, and we enjoy it. All right, Ken, looking forward to seeing you next week at Disneyland. It's going to be a blast.
That's going to be great. So see you, see our listeners, and looking forward to it.
Sounds good. We'll talk with you next time.